This is CliffCentral.com.
I hope you're ready for September. It's only a couple of days away. That's officially the start of spring. Yes.
No, my heart is not pounding. What are you talking about?
Come on.
I'm not panicking at all.
Get excited.
Why don't you have your beach body on?
Leanne, it's just about end of year things.
Yeah, let's not talk
Everyone
about,
needs
let's
to
not
have
talk
their
about
ducks
beach
in a row.
Body, all right? I have so much work to do in that front.
How much did you eat this weekend?
Not really a lot, but I just need to be disciplined about not eating all these carbs and snacking, man. That's my problem. You're doing some work and you're like, I feel like something to snack on. And then you, before you know it, you've like opened a packet of chips and ugh, you feel disgusting afterwards.
Mm.
Anyway, let's not go down that street.
Should be thinking healthily along the lines of fruit.
Yes, apparently, Leanne tells me our oranges, South Africa's oranges, are like the best.
Oh.
Taking the world by storm.
Come on, tell us more.
1 in every 10 oranges eaten around the world now comes from South Africa.
How's that, huh?
Our flourishing fruit industry.
Flourishing fruit industry.
Has increasingly made up a bigger proportion of the international trade.
Mm-hmm.
This is according to the Bureau for Food and Agricultural Policy.
Right.
In its latest agricultural outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Citrus and grapes in particular have strengthened their market position in the past decade. Citrus's market has risen from 4% in 2001 to more than 10% last year.
That's phenomenal.
And also then grapes, table grapes, from 5% to 7%.
Well, this is good. Also good on the economy front.
Absolutely. According to both value and volume, citrus is South Africa's biggest and most important fruit export. By the year 2028, which is just in 8.5 years' time, the country should be exporting 25 more cartons than last year.
Amazing. All right, so there we go. Orange farmers, well done.
Yep.
They're
mostly going to the EU and the UK. Those are the most important export markets for our locally grown fruit. But the populations in both those markets, if you think about it, are growing very slowly, less than 1.5% a year. So we have to kind of source the regions where there are food shortages.
Food shortages.
Like sort of shortages.
Yes, shortages.
So that makes South Africa the world's third largest citrus exporter after Spain and Turkey.
Oh, halala.
Isn't that great?
No, we have to cling on to any sort of good news in the economy front.
Let's take it, man. I think this is awesome.
Absolutely. We also recently started focusing on lemons, limes, and soft citrus, which is naartjies.
Naartjies.
Yeah.
Do you like naartjies?
Well, I do, because they're easily peeled.
Yes, I like naartjies too. I love all citrus. I like fruit. I like lemons.
Lemon like drops.
Oranges. No. Let's not talk about that. Oranges, lemons, tangerines, naartjies.
I hated all of them.
Why?
I wouldn't even have
a sweet
of those.
Why?
They were just so unbearably sour to me.
Oh.
And I only developed a love for them in the past 2 years.
Was that because the gin craze started infusing fruit in it?
No, it actually wasn't.
I see right through you,
Leanne.
You know
what got me back onto citrus was blood orange yogurts.
Yeah. That just made my mouth sour thinking about it.
I obviously have an acid craving because always loved citrus fruit. And it's very good for you. Like lemons are a superfood.
Some people eat lemons like an orange.
Oh, I love a lemon.
I think that has some sort of psychopathic tendency.
No, you don't. Nonsense. It's just it's a
people
craving.
Like you enjoy the pain of tattoos.
Craving. Lemon, you could put lemon on anything, it makes it better.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
Just a couple of lemon drops. Like, if, for example, you like Avo. No, you don't. You don't even eat Avo.
Okay, so,
you know, what's really nice is you take an Avo.
Mention that wretched thing.
This is as far as I'll ever get to being like Jamie Oliver, right? So I do two things that I absolutely love and I could eat them anytime. Tomato and Avo salad. You just chop up some tomato, chop up some Avo, put some salt and pepper on it and drizzle some fucking lemon on it. It's so easy.
Yeah.
And then just take Avo on toast and and squeeze and smush it up, and then put some lemon on that and salt and pepper too. It's just the best.
Love it.
That I could have that for breakfast every day, and I'd never get bored.
And it's also, guys, hello, it's not a hipster thing. I've been doing it since I was a child.
Yeah, hello, what? Leanne. Correcting everyone. Avo and toast.
Everyone's like, oh my God, it's a hipster thing. It's just come out.
All right, you tell those bearded, non-shoe-wearing hipsters.
Typewriter-carrying, yeah.
Let's just carry on in the same vein here, because I love putting lemon juice in my water, my drinking water.
Apparently that's also very good for you.
Really good.
My grandfather used to do that a lot.
Mm, love it. And it is an older people thing, because I notice when I go to the country club, darling, you can have, they have prepared jugs of lemon water.
Mm.
But these are 10 amazing things that can happen to your body, or that do, when you drink lemon water every single day.
Okay.
Go on, let's hear it.
Good for digestive health. Good for your gut, right?
Okay.
Rehydration. The actual lemon helps you replace the water that you've lost.
Okay.
As well as the water that it's in.
Okay.
Good for eye health. Most people associate carrots with good eye health. But in fact, lemons do a great deal to keep eyes healthy over a long time.
Okay, that's good.
Soft skin.
Oh, you got me there.
You don't need to put it on your skin. We're talking about the benefits of lemon juice when it's absorbed internally.
Okay.
The key here, as with the eyes, is antioxidants.
Very good.
The skin. Great for your liver. The tartness is actually citric acid. That's what we register as the flavor.
Ooh,
and citric acid is good for the liver.
You need to be drinking tons of lemon water then.
I do, and it's a vicious cycle.
Just inject that straight to your liver.
Yeah. The sixth thing is potassium, loaded with potassium, which it's not the most potassium rich fruit, but it will help you get to your daily gold. One is colds.
Okay.
Good for colds, all that vitamin C. Good for inflammation.
Yes.
Start getting older, and lemons and citrus fruits provide valuable anti-inflammatory compounds.
I like that.
Number nine, metabolism.
Metabolism, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
It helps, the actual fiber of the lemon helps your stomach work better. You become less susceptible to intense hunger pangs, which lead you to eating more than you should. Natural energy is the last one. You know, it's not fresh air. It has calories in it. It has fruit sugars in it. And it's better than just having water when you're looking for a bit of a boost. Why does your face look so sour?
Because just talking about lemon makes my whole mouth is sour now. It's just, no, I don't like it.
Calm down. No. Nothing's good at it. Can we talk about someone who irritates the hell out of me?
Oh, no.
No, really. This is a person who, whenever I see her on TV or I see her on social media, I get annoyed.
Uh-oh.
And don't get me wrong. She used to be hot, and I used to think, oh, she's quite, attractive, and there's something going on there. And, some of her music wasn't so bad, but my God, she irritates me. Taylor Swift. Can we take a minute to absorb fully how annoying Taylor Swift has become?
I'll echo those sentiments.
You know, it's also, as soon as one of these stars gets this whole clan of ferociously dedicated young girls.
Like she has the Swifties.
Swifties. That immediately becomes annoying to me. Apologies to you, Sia, with the Beyonce clans.
The Beehive.
Well, that's it. What has she done now?
She's just annoying. So Sia tells me that she has released her diary entry from the night that Kanye West stood up and interrupted her at the Grammys.
Right.
I'm going to let you finish, but you remember that whole
thing.
Beyonce should have won.
Yeah. So Taylor's now released her diary entry from that night, as if anybody on earth gives a shit anymore. It was, 10 years ago?
10 years ago to the day.
Get over it.
But it just so happens that it's the release of her new deluxe album called Lover. So she released her album and also released this journal entry all at the same time. I mean, come on now. She was 19 years old when it all happened. And so this is what she wrote the night that Kanye West stopped her. She says, The things that can change in a week. Let's just say if you had told me Kanye West would have been the number one focus of my week, the media and my part in the VMAs, I would have looked at you cross-eyed. Then she goes on and on and on, just feeling bad for herself. But basically, I think she's playing to the entire theme of her new album. It's called Lovers, so she also talks about the haters, and I think that's why she's making this nod to Kanye West. And also, the VMAs are coming up as well.
So it's
and
a whole...
She'll be opening the VMAs.
Cyclical thing.
Yeah, she'll be performing the first on the night, and I think she's just drumming everything up.
She's annoying.
In terms of PR and getting people talking about her, it works and is amazing, but in terms of her likability.
She's just annoying.
I just
really,
don't like her.
I don't know what else to say about this girl. I just don't give her any more attention.
Look, say what you will about the Kardashians as well. And I know the Kardashians don't have a lot of people who like them on a personable level.
And they can't even sing.
But I love the fact that a few years ago, Kanye West released the song Famous.
Yeah.
And one of the lyrics in the song was, I made that bitch famous. Alluding to Taylor Swift. And Kanye West has a whole camera crew follow him whenever he's in the creation process, because as one does. And so he was filmed calling Taylor Swift saying, hey, so I want to include you in my song called Famous. I'm going to include you in a line with the word bitch in it. I hope you don't mind. And Taylor's like, yeah, you know, it will get people talking. Yes, let's release the song. Cut to when the song is released, Taylor Swift then plays the victim. This is when I started not liking the bitch.
Made a bitch famous.
She then became the victim saying, oh my gosh, being referred to you as a bitch. I'm a woman. I can't be doing this. And then Kanye West and the Kardashians aired all of these videos saying, but Taylor,
but
you agree to this. And she's never commented on it since. So okay. Taylor.
Yeah, we could see you.
You shady, slimy, snaky woman.
This might just put you right over the edge because there is some other news about her that's just come out.
Mm-hmm.
She now at meet and greets has security cameras facing her butt because of that incident. Do you remember where there was a DJ?
Yes, and
David
he touched
Miller,
her.
Who yeah. groped, but he actually put his hand under her dress and touched her bare bum.
Yeah.
That was in 2013, and the mm-hmm. whole thing went to trial. He came back countersuing for defamation. Then she came back for sexual assault. But now she has cameras facing her bum during the meet and greets.
I don't even have anything to say about
She's
that.
She's so irritating. Let's move on.
Okay, let's rank them. Where does Taylor Swift rank with Anne Hathaway?
On the annoying list?
Mm.
Anne Hathaway is still right up there, but I'd say Taylor might have just pipped her to the post now.
And then Sarah Jessica Parker? Or did you just not like her teeth?
No, I don't mind Sarah. I don't care about Sarah Jessica Parker.
Keira Knightley?
I like Keira Knightley.
Oh, geez, that's a name I haven't heard in years.
Are these all the people in your head that get associated together?
Yeah.
Okay. Meryl Streep?
Oh, for me...
No, I love her.
Ariana?
Ariana Grande.
Grande, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Bieber?
No, not annoying to me.
No, I think we've gone through a few. We've pissed people off. Let's just
yeah, Taylor's on. Just right up there.
All the groupies.
A few messages. Did Sia just call Taylor's album Dulux? That's paint. I think he meant deluxe.
Oh, sorry, the deluxe album.
Guys, how do you not
That's
love...
That's how much he cares.
How do you not love her recent album? At least tell me you've listened. It's really, really, really good. Oh. That's from Kucho.
Well, I do think on a business front as well. See, I'm an equal lover and an equal hater. On the business front, she's really smart because she's announced that her initial music contract ends in November of next year. And she's announced that she will re-record all of her previous songs so that she has full ownership of it. So wherever it's used, wherever it's released, wherever it's played, all of the royalties will go straight to her as opposed to her previous contract, which, like, the major cut went to the record label. So I guess, yeah. Okay, Taylor.
All right.
Still not my fave.
Let's get on to some other things.
Can we talk about matters of life and death, literally?
All right.
So this new research was released just a little after we wrapped the show up on Friday, so it's a couple of days late. But according
Hillary Clinton suicided someone else?
I hereby suicide you.
And, you know, she predicts this in the future. According to Time magazine, a team of researchers have now taken blood samples from over 40,000 healthy patients to now come to the conclusion that they can predict our mortality rates. I don't know if you'd like this, but they've now published that their research is 80% accurate and they are able to predict death risks within a 5 to 10 year time frame for people. Mm-hmm. So we are now moving to the time when we could find out exactly when we could die.
But I already kind of know. They say smoking increases your chances of stroke by 900%. Drinking too much wine
legitimate.
Increases your chance of heart attacks by 8,000%. So I already know that my time here is I have not long for this world.
What's your time frame? What?
10 years.
You reckon you've got another 10 years
maximum?
Leanne,
you think you'll be dead in 10 years?
Yeah. Well, you guys are going to miss me. Look at you.
Do you really think you've only got 10 years?
I'm doing all the wrong things. I'm not exercising like I should be. So I don't need this test. Oh, God. Do you remember we used to do those tests where they would give us our heart age as well?
Mm.
So what are you going to do for your last 10 years?
Well, I'm doing this. You guys seem really concerned. I'm quite happy.
You don't feel like you need to learn a new language.
Take
things
that
off your bucket list.
This is great.
Really?
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
You could live a lot longer if you started changing things now, but yes. You don't want to.
No, I do want to. I'm not getting around to it.
Other things are not as important. This should be priority number one, or don't you feel it's urgent?
I do. I try every now and then to quit something
to live.
I can't believe you're giving yourself 10
years. Would you want to know? Would you want to use this test? And
well, no, I'd prefer not to know, because then you'd just be consumed by dread as you approach that date.
But I was having a conversation with people over the weekend around this, and a lot of people were actually on the note of wanting to know, because they said they wouldn't like to know to the specific day, but to know, okay, great, I have 10 more years. You know what? Then I actually am going to go to France. I'm actually going to learn how to cook.
I think people would
get married now.
They'd do very dangerous and stupid stuff if they knew they had only a limited amount of time. I think that that's a very bad idea. But at the same time, it's probably helpful because you can move that date.
That's it. Yeah. So what was motivational for me initially on our cards, we did it every year, right?
Yeah.
And the one year in particular, I reduced my heart age from the last time by, I think, 15 years because I'd given up smoking. I'd started running 10K races.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be quite happy to know that the test results if I knew that it was a sliding scale. And I could change things if I started adding or taking away lifestyle habits.
Oh. So the ages of these patients range from 18 years old to over 100 years old. And they all sat through rigorous testing in which their health events were tracked over time.
Shame. So rigorous with the over 100 year olds.
Yeah, I mean, what do you really need to analyze with the 100 year old? I mean, you don't really have a long time. So the team is still underway with their testing, and it's not ready for use by doctors, but it opens up an avenue for patients to help them prep for when their time is up here on Earth.
Hmm. Yeah. There's also a danger where, you know, it might say, oh, you've got 25 years left to live, and then you run over by a truck.
Yeah, well, this is just your natural body aging and then your day to die. It's not, okay, well, tomorrow you'll be in an accident.
No. Yeah, it's not like those very excellent fortune tellers on caravans in the side of the road.
I mean, the one we spoke to last week.
I didn't say that, yeah.
Okay, Leanne, you have 10 more years.
If that.
2029.
I think that's depressing. I don't want to know about that. I'd just like to live thinking that I'm going to live forever. And I still want to. If anyone has a anyone has a plan, I'm ready. I'm ready to live forever.
That's good.
I'm ready now. I could easily spend the rest of eternity in this body and this life. Very happy.
Would you be fine with your body being kept alive for... Well,
I'd prefer it to be at this age. I don't want it necessarily be older.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily want to be younger. I feel like I'm happy with what I got at the moment.
Well, that's good. And it's quite a thing to say on your birthday.
Yeah. So, yes, I'd like to pause and save game, if you don't mind.
It doesn't matter if, like, you're sitting in a random ward in PE, but you'll stay there for 30 years up until, you know, there's science to...
Oh, you mean, like, to freeze me? Like, like Walt Disney wanted to do, where they cryogenically freeze you and then they wake you up in, like, 30, 40 years.
Would you like that? Happy.
Of course, if I can come back. If it gives me immortality, sure.
I don't know. I quite like,
but I'd like a guarantee.
Routine of this current Earth.
No, I'd like to.
I know where the smash and grab hotspots are.
You like that, huh?
I know. I have to put my bag in the boot.
All right.
The routine of Earth.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is hilarious. You've got to hear him here. He's talking about how he's the chosen one to take on China. He's completely. I think he's trolling people. I really don't think he believes this stuff. I think he's trolling people. This is what he does.
Somebody said it's Trump's trade war. This isn't my trade war. This is a trade war that should have taken place a long time ago by a lot of other presidents. Over the last 5 or 6 years, China's made $500 billion. $500 billion. Ripped it out of the United States. And not only that, if you take a look, intellectual property theft. Add that to it. And they had a lot of other things to it. So somebody had to do it. I am the chosen one. Somebody had to do it.
When he says that, he looks up at the sky. Like he goes, I am the chosen. I think he's trolling the media.
I think so too.
I don't think he actually, I think he gets back after that and he gets onto the helicopter or wherever he's heading and he goes, those fucking idiots.
Yeah.
He's like, it's so easy to piss these people off. I really don't think, because he's doing it like a comedian. He looks up at the sky I'm the chosen one. And these media people lose their minds.
Lap it up. He knows exactly what he's doing with things like this. Last week, he was at a rally of some sort, and he said something along the lines of, love me or hate me, you're going to vote for me.
Yeah, here, let me play it for you. This is hilarious. I know exactly the clip you're talking about. At one of his rallies in New Hampshire. First of all, I think he loves the campaigning. This is his favorite thing because he gets crowds. He always says, we've got a complete sellout crowd. It's totally full to the rafters. Where Bernie Sanders got 100 people, we've got 10,000 people.
He loves it. 10,000.
No, 10, well, if he was Jacob Zuma, 10,000 would be plenty.
But let me tell you, if for some reason I wouldn't have won the election, these markets would have crashed. And that'll happen even more so in 2020. See, the bottom line is, I know you like me, and this room is a love fest, I know that. But you have no choice but to vote for me, because your 401ks, down the tubes, everything's going to be down the tubes. So whether you love me or hate me, you got to vote for me.
He's trolling everybody. And he's loving this. Mm. He's having the time of his life. I actually think he is on a major high.
This room is a love fest. Yeah.
Keep America great. That's the new slogan, right? Not make America great again. Now, keep America great.
I kind of liked it when he was struggling a little. You could see he was...
Do you think so?
Yeah. I don't like him being happy.
Wow. All right.
Wait,
is it horrible for me?
No, that's good. You don't have to have... Listen, you don't need to like your leader. This is what people, they get stuck. You don't have to want to be their friend. A good leader is actually someone who sometimes says no when you want them to say yes because they're doing what's right. I want my leaders to be cleverer than me. I want them to be smarter than me. I want them to be better than me at everything. Now, I'm not saying he is. I'm certainly not saying that about Cyril. I kind of like a leader who gives me something to look up to, not something to look across at.
Mm.
I don't want them to be my equal. Mm. I'd like them to be way smarter than I am.
Which, of course, Zuma was.
He was great. Compared to like how I'm feeling about Cyril at the moment, I'd actually kind of like him back.
No, no, no.
He at least had
really?
His.
No.
Wait. No. Pause. No. Just stop the traffic.
No, take away the talking wand.
Do you want him back?
I'm not saying I actually want him back, but he was at least in charge of the ANC. Cyril's not in charge of the ANC. Zuma, you've got to give credit. Pumi said this the other day. You've got to give credit to him. He kept a tight leash on those ANC people. He had them all at his beck and call. He was in charge. There was no disputing that Jacob Zuma was the president, right? Cyril is – he can't even – we don't know who's in charge of the ANC at the moment. Is it Ace? Is it Cyril? Is it David Mabuza? Who's in charge here? He's not strong. I'm not saying that strong is always the winner or that strong is necessarily what you want. But just think about that for a second. Cyril doesn't have the control that Jacob Zuma had on the ANC.
Okay, I hear you.
By sheer force of will, you need to be a strong person to handle those responsibilities. And even though he was an ignoramus and he drove our economy into free fall and ruined the parastatals. And
he gave us many of quotes.
Yeah, I mean, so many stupid things said. But he had control of the ANC. It was his machine. And you need to have someone who's in control. It's kind of what Donald Trump's done with the Republican Party. Taking control. Anyway, so there's some funny stuff that's going on. Now, remember Jussie Smollett?
Yeah.
We haven't spoken about him in a while.
Yeah, he's the guy who made up that hoax, the race hoax and the anti-gay hoax.
Mm-hmm.
A Chicago judge on Friday named a special prosecutor to look into why the state dropped charges against Jussie Smollett that accused him of staging that racist anti-gay attack against himself. And the reason that they're doing this is because they say that Jussie pulled some strings and he got some people who were in high places to drop the charges. And he really should be charged. The guy made up a race hoax.
Mm.
And this is something that happens a lot more than people would like to admit. And they need to stop it in its tracks. So he needs to at least own up. Because he's never even admitted that he did it. He stood by his story. He said, oh no, it wasn't made up. Which is bullshit. We have camera footage that shows it didn't happen. So here's that.
Take this opportunity to thank Judge Tooman and the Cook County court system for their confidence in choosing me and Winston and Strong for this.
This is the special prosecutor, by the way.
Very important special prosecutor assignment. Obviously, this is something we take very seriously. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. There are four government agencies that have already done some form of factual investigation, either ongoing or has already been concluded. And I intend to interact with those four agencies very quickly to try to gather evidence from them that they've already gathered regarding this case. I don't know where this case is going. I'm going to take it one step at a time. I got to master the facts. I got to learn the legal issues, and I got to be fair to everybody. But I can tell you right now, our strategy and our plan is to expedite it and move forward very quickly.
Okay, so there we go. They're not going to give up on this. Good.
I think that
he got off scot-free.
I think it is a good thing because let's.
Do you remember him going on that show and crying?
Crying.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of weeks ago, there was police body cam that was released that caught Jussie in his apartment when he was interacting with police with the noose around his neck. And he's like, guys, I really can't even talk. Can I get this noose off? I'm like, okay. And the Academy Award
goes to
you, Jussie.
But this is the point. He's also a shitty actor.
Yeah.
He's not even good at that. So screw you, dude.
Well, I'm
glad they're going after you.
Tying it to something that I was reminded of this past weekend, I finally got around to watching the Rachel Dolezal documentary. And I'm probably one of seven people who've watched it the world over, I think.
Jussie Smollett may have enacted one event as a hoax, but this whole woman's, her whole life is a hoax. She's the, remember who Rachel Dolezal is? She's the white woman who claims that she's black.
Yes, was living her whole life like that.
Her two lily white parents who have been interviewed before, and they're like whiter than me and Leanne, they are her real parents. She claims they're not.
Yeah, and if you dig deeper into the story, you do find out that there was abuse in the home as she was a child, and then her parents later on adopted black kids because they got a stipend or some sort of amount of money from the state to live on. That's how poor they were. And it doesn't need Dr. Phil to crack this code to see that, okay, if her parents were abusing Rachel and Rachel ended up wanting to distance herself from her parents and ended up liking her adopted siblings more, who were all black, that's how she came to have this identity thing of, oh no, well, I identify as black. But bringing it back to the Jussie point, this is what the documentary revealed that I didn't know of up until I watched it. Do you know how we all came to find out about Rachel Dolezal? Because she was living in the middle of nowhere up until that viral video.
Did you feel a bit of sympathy for her after watching it?
Definitely no sympathy, but I understand I understand the picture more. Okay. I don't think it's, you know, transracial and whatnot.
Do you think she's got a mental health issue?
She's a victim of abuse.
Okay.
Her parents, like, abused her and her siblings. They were poor.
Physically or emotionally?
Yeah,
or
physically,
both?
Everything. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Properly abused her. She has an elder biological brother who was like the shining example in all of the family, who ended up molesting Rachel.
Aye.
And she told her parents this countless times, and her parents always stood by her brother, saying, no, Josh would never do this. Like, you're just making this up. You're lying. So when all of this Rachel drama happened, the reason why her parents started doing all of these press interviews as well is because there was a court case going on within the family at that time, because one of the other sisters was taking the older brother to court as well about the sexual abuse. And the parents were fully understanding that the more interviews they do in painting Rachel as a nutcase, that would further detract from the other sister as well, and saying, well, you know, Rachel is a nutcase, so the sister is also a nutcase, you know, going around saying
that
her brother
is
sexually
abusive.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the parents and the elder brother are really the big ones in the picture who really go about with this abusive behavior. But going back to why and how we know about Rachel, remember there was that one news clip that we all saw.
Yes.
Of the newscaster asking Rachel, so are you African American? And then she walks off.
Yes.
That interview came to be because Rachel, as the head of the NAACP, seemingly created her own race hoax by sending herself abusive letters. So, like, she would write her own racist messages saying, yeah, like, how, you know, blacks are whatnot and blacks are whatnot. And she would mail that to herself. And then she ended up going to the media saying, as the head of the NAACP, as a black person, I'm being victimized. So the newscasters were actually going to interview this head of the NAACP for being victimized. But of course, doing their research, they started going, wait, hold up. Okay. Where does she come from and who are her parents and what is exactly going on? So one could actually argue that Rachel brought this all onto her own.
Yeah.
What a dodo.
But there is something to be said for these people who, and they're always kind of on the left, and they've got this victim mentality, and they love it. They thrive on it. And then they create their own false narrative in their head. I have to get to grips with why they do this. It bothers me on some level that, because what they really are doing is disempowering and ruining the case of actual victims.
Mm.
So that in their heads, whether it's Jussie Smollett or Rachel Dolezal, they see themselves as the victim, right? But actually, in attributing all this victimhood to themselves, they end up hurting the case of real victims.
They dilute them.
It's like crying wolf.
Mm.
And I don't understand why they would be so disingenuous and so self-absorbed that they'd be prepared to hurt the cause of other people,
yeah,
who are actually in peril. You know, it's like, for example, a woman who makes up a rape charge, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's fairly devastating. When she does that, what she's doing is she's making it very difficult for actual rape victims to be taken seriously. Because
it's almost making a mockery of it.
That's the point. And I find it very, very scary. Like, there's some kind of, it's pathological.
Yeah, it's, you know what? You actually get people, for instance, who are involved in medical aid fraud.
Yeah.
Who are faking mental illness, faking incidents like strokes,
yes,
not being able to walk, trying to get disability funds. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you live your life.
People
like
do
that.
And they'll take money from the state, and they'll take money from charities, and it's the same. It's in the same vein. All of that stuff is like the same kind of problem. And I do not understand. Maybe that's why I get so annoyed by the Rachel Dolezals and the Jussie Smollett's. Like, these are not good people. Mm. They are actually wicked, evil people.
And like that woman, I think she was in New Zealand or Australia, who lied. She had everybody following her on social media and listening to her calls every day and making donations to because she had cancer. It turned out she didn't have cancer at all.
Wow.
I also
have to be a sick individual.
I don't get how, if you really want to go on this cause and you really want this attention on you, can you not be basic and stupid by going about it? Jussie, yeah, try to be at least a little smarter. But Rachel, as the head of the NAACP and mailing herself all of these letters, she was one of two people who had access to this mailbox where all of these letters were received. When they went to the post office actually said, like, no, these letters did not go through our system. So there are no stamps. It was not delivered by any of our mail people.
She's an idiot.
So the other person who had access to this mailbox admitted it was not me. So, I mean, duh, process of elimination. Rachel, you were mailing yourself these letters. Like, couldn't you have been a little smarter and wiser with how you go about this? But this documentary that I watched was released at the end of 2018, and it follows her just after she went viral to when she releases her book. And the last scene in the documentary was the stats of her book sales, and was 590 odd books sold.
Only 590 books total.
Yes.
That's terrible. No one cares.
I do own one.
You bought one. Did you buy it? You're fascinated by her, huh?
In Full Color. That's what it's called.
Oh, for God's sake.
What is it called? In Full Color, My Life in a Black and White World. Something along those lines.
Are you following her on social media as well?
No.
You're a little bit upset.
After the documentary, I did go back to her social media, and I saw how she now also sells her own merchandise. So she sold wrapping paper at a point with her face on it.
Oh, for God's sake. What a terrible person.
If you do want to, you know, wrap your gifts in Rachel Dolezal paper, she has
awful.
Some of that. Yeah, guys, you know, times are tough. So if you're Rachel Dolezal, you need to earn your stripes and your rands and send somewhere.
What a nutcase. Hey, he's here. Jason Goliath has popped in to see us. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm late and I'm sorry. And I ask for forgiveness from the whole internet.
Don't stress. Please. Don't worry about it. It happens to all of us. There's really no issue. Like, people get upset about this stuff. I'm like, so what?
The whole internet.
I feel like you're the only human that doesn't get upset.
Well, we had a discussion about it last week, and I realized, like, I'm obsessed with it, and it's unnecessary. People,
with time.
With people being late,
and the respect of it.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
No, but I'm apologizing because my wife has been, you know, when my wife gets upset and I'm late for somebody else, I'm not even like late for her, then she's angry.
Things, man? You're looking good.
I feel amazing. I feel amazing considering it's early in the morning on a Monday.
Yeah.
And I agreed to come here. You know what I mean? That's a big deal already. I think I've started today right.
Well, you have. You've started it in our company, which is what we're very happy about.
What a wonderful thing. Thank you for having me.
So what's been happening with you, man? What's going on?
Man,
you're
so
married.
Many. I am married. Should we start there?
Yeah,
I'm married.
Your wife?
I think I'm still on honeymoon. I've been married now for 7 menstrual cycles, which is
amazing.
Which is wonderful.
Is that how you're counting your marriage life?
I feel like I'm just trying to be an honest husband, and I feel like there's a definite change, and I feel like every husband out there just went, yeah, that's a great way to calculate it. And so I'm writing a show about it, which I'm doing next month.
I'm sure your wife must be delighted to know that you're talking about.
Let me tell you, not only is she delighted that I'm talking about it, but she was even more delighted when she heard about the name of the show. Please ask me what the name of my
What's the name of the show?
The new show is called Menstruation. Surviving a Wife. That is the name of the show.
You're starting this marriage well. You're really trying to piss her off properly.
No, but it's only the name that frustrates her, because the whole show is about the fact that I now finally understand that it's not your fault, woman. It's not your fault, ladies. Mm-hmm. It's your body's fault. Your body sabotages you with these chemicals. Men don't understand. We don't have these chemicals. And therefore, it's about bringing men into the truth of the situation, which is it's not her fault. Forgive her. She gets overcome. Basically like Venom, he's the superhero. There's like another person that lives inside her from another world, and it makes bad decisions once a month.
I don't know if you're doing yourself any favors here.
Come in. All I'm saying is, ladies especially, come and watch the show and just believe that I'm on your side. I'm just like, guys need to lighten up. We need to understand and we need to sympathize with the fact that our bodies cooperate.
Can we talk about your very unconventional wedding for a minute?
I'd love to.
Okay, so first of all, you guys got married in bride and groom t-shirts.
Yes, matching. And matching sneakers.
You did it 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yes, on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. You didn't make a big fuss. Your mother was the only person who spoke.
Yes.
Beautiful.
How did you know that?
I know lots of things about you. Oh,
yes, my mother was the only person. And she wasn't invited to speak. So, like, there was going to be nobody speaking, and then all of a sudden, because my mother knows the minister, then now things had been arranged, and then my mother had a piece of paper and a speech, and then I cried.
Yeah, a mother being a mother.
No, a mother takes over. Yes. And because mothers also know that the memory needed her.
You only had 40 guests.
Yeah.
They were invited to the church and then the airport for the reception.
Well, technically, nobody was invited. So our rule was we had our mothers and immediate family, so brothers and sisters and their significant others, and anybody who'd kind of WhatsApped us in the 4 or 5 days leading up, we just were kind of, hey, what are you doing on Tuesday? I promise you. Like,
really?
What are you doing? What are you doing on Tuesday? And people are like, why? And we're like, well, we're getting married. If you want to pop in, you're more than
Fantastic.
Welcome.
Fantastic.
You know why it was fantastic? And I don't think it's everybody's plan, but it was definitely kind of a plan that worked for us. But why it was fantastic was the ceremony was so emotional because nobody was waiting for the after party for their tears. Right. So we had 40 people there, well, 50 technically, and 50 people cried. So it was one of those, because this was the main event and this was it. And then one of my wife's friends baked a cake because she likes to bake. So we had some cake and tea. And then I said to everybody that was there, well, if you guys aren't busy later, we're flying out this afternoon. Meet me at Wimpy at the airport and I'll buy you all a burger. And so I had a big table and that is my reception. And then we went on a holiday we couldn't afford.
That's amazing, though. Where did you go?
So we started off in the Maldives.
Mm.
Beautiful. When you get married on a Tuesday at 10 o'clock, it changes.
Did you stay at that place where you got those chalets on the water?
We did. We did. Ooh. It's, you know, I can't explain it. The Maldives is one of those things where I feel like it's even though it's on your bucket list, even after you've gone, you don't scratch it off the list because you just want to go back.
Yeah.
It's what you see on the postcard. That's the thing. The most Amazing. Ridiculous experience of my whole life and so, worth getting married on a Tuesday.
You look through the floor of your thing and you see the fish swimming.
No, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. I think my moment was when I knew, like, you know, when you start feeling like I'm not Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Only Jay-Z holidays like this is when we get to the resort and they're doing a bit of a tour and they take us past like the little sea sport, you know, chalet where you can come and fetch your flippers and stuff.
Mm.
So the next morning we take a walk up, go and collect some flippers and goggles, and I say to the lady, like, okay, so from, you know, what time does the boat leave to go snorkeling? You know, are there different times during the day? And she goes, oh, no, you see your thing is in the water there. You see where the water changes color? That's where you snorkel. Right there, just jump in the water and just swim there 20 meters and then you are snorkeling there in real life. That's the reef right there. Then I was like, okay, I'm Jay-Z.
Wow.
I'm Jay-Z.
You're Jay-Z, right?
It's done. No, it's done.
Pinch yourself.
It's done.
Fantastic. God, that's knackered.
Best ever. Spent the money on ourselves. We were the most important people in the world for 2 weeks. And the best thing ever. I just looked at the list of invites when we were planning the wedding and I was like, why am I spending this money on these people? I don't even like most of them. And then I just spent it all on ourselves.
How many people did you get up to before you're like, can it? Yeah.
It was 250. We got down to, because you don't get up to, because you start with the maximum strength wish list from both sides,
mm-hmm.
and then it was like 400 people, and then I was like, yo, that's a lot of beetroot. Yes, that's too much. And then so we were aiming to get it down to 200, and we had this elaborate scheme. I was gonna have a special thing. I chatted to the Westcliff, and they were gonna do the first ever like double wedding. And that was, by that I mean I was gonna have the intimacy of like a 60 people, little lunch on the terrace, and then invite everybody for the after party, because I figured everybody likes to come for the opening of the dance floor anyway.
Sure.
So I have like an intimate lunch for 60, and then invite another 140 people to join us for the opening of the dance floor in the kind of bigger room. Then you have the intimacy and the big thing and the big check. And then I met a friend of mine who said that he'd given his wife the most incredible wedding ever, and it was just the two of them. And I ran the idea by my wife, and she said, "Well, I'm having the big wedding for you." And I said, "But I'm paying for it, so clearly it's me doing." We ran away. Best decision ever.
And you know what? People spend all this money on a wedding, and they don't even remember most of it. They have to look at the photographs to see what happened.
True.
You know, what the hell for? And you've gone into debt.
Incredible debt. Yeah. I'm talking, people are spending house money. And there's also this wedding culture of like there's a competitive.
Hundreds of thousands of rands.
Minimum, my friend.
Yeah.
Minimum. Hundreds of thousands of rands. Like I was looking at my quotes. Hundreds of thousands of rands before I put a flower on a table.
Yeah.
Before I've got a stage and a DJ and
just
a light
the venue.
In the corner. Just the venue and the food. Then, you know, Mos, I'm a kalati. We are thirsty for alcohol.
Mm.
Then.
Thirsty.
Doors.
You have to pay for that bar.
No, it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth. Now you're looking for sponsors from rum companies. Come on, what's going on? Sponsor my wedding.
And I hate that when people, you see that they've had their wedding paid for by
Don't
someone
you?
Else. Oh, I can't stand it. It's like, this is your wedding. The least you could do is pay for your actual wedding.
I want to thank my mom and alcohol company B. I'm not even going to give anybody
what a terrible thing
in
to
the speech.
Do.
I've seen this thing.
Yeah, I know.
I've emceed those weddings.
Awful.
Yeah, but they're the only weddings that can afford us, Gareth. Let's be honest. When we do MC, then
I've never MC'd a wedding. I wouldn't MC someone.
Never.
Else. No, friends, people I actually know. But if someone paid me to MC a wedding, I wouldn't know what to do.
Oh no, me, I'm poor. Eh? I'm not like you.
Would you do that?
I believe every man's got a price for everything.
Probably. I mean, listen. Maybe I'd do it for the right money, but it would feel weird. Because what do you say at someone's wedding where you don't even know them?
Oh no, you have the classics. I honestly think I'm the best wedding MC in the country right now.
You probably are.
And that's only because I love, and I won't MC your wedding if I don't like you. So my thing is I don't need to know you, but I have to meet with the couple before, and if I don't believe in the chemistry of what I see, then I can't do it. But if I believe in the chemistry of what I see, then I believe that I'm more important than DJ, and I've got like a formula. I have like a formula, and if you're listening, I am more cost-effective than Gareth to MC your wedding.
Sure.
So what do you say to the people who you realize, this isn't a good match?
Well, then I just say something's come up, and I'm busy, and you can't afford. You can't tell them to their faces.
Yeah.
Because the woman, she believes now. She's got the ring, and then the diamond makes her believe that the fairy tale has begun. And then if I tell her, but you are wasting.
It's a disaster.
This man is a loose force, man. You can't.
A loose force.
Then you can't. Now you can't be telling. Then some people must just experience and become the statistics. You know what I mean?
But business is good, huh?
Business is good, but I think naturally at this kind of part of a recession recovery is where, you know, the man on the street is feeling it at maximum strength.
Yeah, they don't have enough disposable income to go and entertain themselves like they might have before.
Absolutely. So it's business is good, but I think based on the times, everybody's kind of innovating and hustling, and it's not a negative thing. I'd like to look at it like, you know, my business specifically is in a phase where we are toughening up and bolstering the foundation. So we're spending more than we're making at the moment, but that's only because the future looks bright enough for us to want to go higher. You know what I mean?
Good.
So before you build up, you got to make sure that the ground is strong. And we're in that phase with lots of new things happening, lots of interesting and exciting developments from a comedy point of view, from a business point of view. We've just opened an agency. So before we were kind of an exclusive agency for the three Goliaths, and now we, if you go to our website, goliathandgoliath.com, we represent a number of up and coming and well established
acts. Well, you guys have rewritten the rules there, so I think a lot of these comedians would want to know that they're in good hands.
Absolutely.
They're being managed by people that can actually help them grow their brand and do the right gigs and earn the right money.
And want them to do well.
I
think you understand this. It's like, you know, from an entertainment point of view, I get so frustrated with entertainers who are too competitive with each other, where we kind of realize that we've got to be, you know, ambassadors for each other, specifically with comedy, because comedy is a weird thing. Like with music, you can watch Mikasa every day of the week or listen to Mikasa every day of the week. But once you've heard my joke, that's it. You don't want to hear that joke again. What you do want to hear again, though, if I do it well, is more comedy.
Right.
So if I do well, I, you know, create an appetite for the next guy and so forth. So we're all working for each other. And I think that's what the agency's about. It's about kind of having an understanding that we'd like to, as Goliath and Goliath, I think, rebuild the trust between corporate and comedy, which I think has been kind of degraded a little bit over the years, you know, because comedy's a wild and crazy art and very often disturbs.
Yeah, a lot of these corporates, they want things to be really, really funny, but super safe.
Yeah.
It's boring.
So we want you to be hilarious, but don't talk about race, religion, politics, money, sex. Don't talk about it. So then I just go and do knock-knock jokes. Then I just like...
Yeah, because that's all you're going to
do. That must be a hit.
Oh, no, but I'm a boss.
He's good at
the knock-knock.
He knows his knock-knock jokes.
Everybody says come in.
But have you found that comedy has become a little bit more complicated by all this political correctness? Because people like that stuff. I mean, you see them dredging up stuff from comedians. Who was it? It was Chris Rock. They found some clip of him 12 years ago.
And Kevin Hart had the big
Kevin Hart, of course,
lately.
with the he was meant to host the Oscars.
Yeah.
You see this stuff, and do you ever wonder whether people are going to go onto your timeline from like 8 years ago and find something that you said in that context was very funny, and they're going to blow it out of proportion, and then you're suddenly going to be the next guy who's like the Me Too target.
Yeah, well, the truth is, do I ever wonder? No. Is it going to happen? Yes.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that, I mean, we saw it with Trevor when he got the big job where people kind of trolled and went way back as far as they could go to find...
One sexist joke.
Absolutely. And then out of context, everything just, you know, they kind of paint a picture. But I've always been kind of firm in the belief that I'm... marginally protected because I try to have a consistency of self in the sense that I want to be the same human being with everybody everywhere. So I want to be the same guy with my mom, with my priest, with my best friends, with my wife, you know, with the boys, just to not have to stress about did I, would I, could I, should I. And I think that's been a great kind of savior for me. So I trolled myself, I went back, and I can't really find anything that I think I wouldn't be proud of. Because some stuff has got to stay out
there. There's got to be someone who's going to find something.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what you got to do when it does happen? Just do not apologize.
How do you, but don't you have to earn that right to not apologize? Like you're a legend. You don't have to say sorry to anybody because people just go, but that's OGC. You know how that guy is. You know what I mean?
No, but you see, I think this goes for anybody. It's not just for people who are in public and because now everyone is, you know, a broadcaster.
Yeah,
is a content generator.
Absolutely. As soon as you press post.
And I was talking to these people on Saturday. They were saying, you know, what do you do when you get trolled on the internet by someone who's complaining about, like, let's say you're in the tourism business.
Yeah.
Someone goes onto your website and goes, I had a shit tour with Jason and screw him and his company's cuck and everything. Most people would immediately rush to try and make it better.
Yeah.
They'd say, listen, can we do something to help you?
Yeah, here's a voucher.
Because we want to take that comment down and we want to, like, it's going to do us a world of bad publicity after this. So let's try and figure out a way. Don't do that. Those people are often just looking for attention.
Yeah.
They often just shit people.
Yes.
And they've got a bug up their backside about something.
Yeah.
And you just happen to be their target for that day. You have to teach those people that kind of behavior does not get rewarded. So
Preach.
What you've got to do is go to them and ruin their lives if they're going to do that to you.
I normally just into myself think that's why you have 27 followers. 27 is the number. It's those people. People with less than 27, they're still very humble in the game. They don't really, you know what I mean? But 27 inspires a confidence because now you believe, no, man, I can get to 50. You know what I mean? Now you're trying to troll me so that I can repost
but
and engage.
Don't ever apologize to those people.
No.
Don't try to reconcile with them.
No.
You've got to hit them low.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say to them, F you.
But this is the blessing of comedy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always kind of go, I exist in many environments where I can be absolutely unapologetic. If you come to a comedy show and you've purchased a ticket, essentially that's the disclaimer for my thoughts in their rawest form possible.
Right.
And in that case, I believe the old saying of, you know,
it's offense, in the terms and conditions. Yeah.
And then offense can't be given, it can only be taken.
Uh-huh.
If you took offense, this is your problem. Because I know in my heart my intention is never to offend.
Actually one of the comedians who's got the best reputation for being one of those guys who's not out there trying to be cruel and vicious.
No, I want to make the world better.
Yeah,
that's the truth. I want to make the world just a little bit better. If I can make one person's day a bit happier and one person think a little bit less about their stress and the immediacy of their situation, then my life is great.
Tell me about this show that you're going to be doing, Celebrity Game Night.
Well, Celebrity Game Night is exciting, and then we have to chat about Comedy Central while I'm actually here.
Cool,
you know
cool,
what I mean?
Cool.
We
yeah, they
make
want
sure
their
that
plug.
My things
sure.
are done.
Sure.
But Celebrity Game Night is... the first audition I've been to in a long time where I got the butterflies. Because, you know, sometimes in our game, you get the butterflies in the beginning.
Did they make you audition?
A screen test, more.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't have to audition.
It was still one of those things that I wanted because it, I think, is the first time I will be on television as absolutely brutally Jason Goliath and nobody else. Because it's a game night. So it's hosted by an LM daughter, who is one of my favorites, and I'm sure she's yours too. Just an absolute regal queen at the moment. And essentially, myself and Ayanda Tabete host two teams of celebrities on every episode. And then we play games that you would play at your local game night. We've got a barman, who is sexy. Sam, and he's amazing.
Ooh.
And then we have the country's A-listers doing ridiculous things, like, you know, everything from as simple as charades to games like Heads Up and different versions thereof, which what I loved the most about it is it's a show that allows you to see your favorite South African celebrities like you've never seen them before.
I like that.
As if there are no cameras.
That's very nice.
And just be a fly on the wall with their real, true reactions. But
it's
great. We don't have TX dates yet, but it is on eAfrica, and I think it's going to be super exciting e-entertainment.
Nice.
I can't wait.
All right, then talk to me about Comedy Central.
So Comedy Central, these people are clever, these Comedy Central. So you know, like, as a comedian, you've got a natural love for Comedy Central, and particularly in South Africa, because Comedy Central is obviously the mothership for comedy in the world, right?
Sure.
And because it's so huge in the world, comedians in the world don't have the type of access that we have. And Comedy Central Africa are really engaging, and, you know, they try their best to kind of be part of our
And they've
our
done
community.
Some amazing projects here.
Yes.
Really, really good stuff.
And when you consider that they do these projects on the Rand versus, you know, internationally on the dollar.
That's incredible.
Really great. So this show is essentially a clip show that we all love. We all love seeing people fall on their faces and kids run into glass sliding doors. You know we love that. Especially, I love a four-year-old running into a glass sliding door.
I was on Suzelle.
That's the one.
Yeah. So this is most ridiculous.
This is the one. So it's most ridiculous. You've done it. I've done it. My episode is tonight because it runs at Mondays at 9:30. And it's essentially, you get to hang out with Suzelle, which is an experience in its own.
Yes.
She is absolutely incredible and so wonderfully South African, I want to say. She's wonderfully South African. And if anybody's upset by that, go and find a Suzelle outside of South Africa, because that thing is only made here. That product of Suzelle that is only made and distributed here. Even if you go Windhoek, the accents may be similar, but it's not the same.
She's not human. She's a Suzelle.
She's a Suzelle. Exactly. And now you get to basically watch a clip show with Suzelle, and we run the commentary, and it is most ridiculous. I think that's the only way. So if you want to escape for a little bit, I always like, you know, people are too serious and we're too close to our problems, and we always smell of, you know, debit order and regret. It's true. Look at your face. You know the debit order stress. Don't pretend. Then I'm like, just escape from all of that. Escape from every problem you have. Put your phone in silent for 30 minutes. You know what I mean? Nothing is more urgent than 30 minutes. And just have a look at people falling, can I say moor on this?
Yeah, of course.
Falling their moor off. That's fantastic. Literally, it's so great. It's a wonderful escape and a great laugh and innocent and fun. And
well, look at you.
Future.
I mean, things are going very well and you deserve every bit of it. I know how hard you work.
Thank you.
Now you're married. You've got a show. You're basically telling your wife's secrets and making her the object of this next show.
Yeah, she's very great, brave. And it was in the contract. Mm. You know what I mean? If you want to marry a comedian, you know our business is the business of the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife has been instrumental in also developing the content, because I want to be the first guy who can say it from a woman's perspective. You know what I mean? And not from a woman's perspective, but from an understanding of a woman's perspective. So it's a non-biased take on what women go through and how I believe you can kind of get through it with a bit of smartness. And of course, I'm doing it all with a learner's license. You know what I mean? Because I'm newly married, but I'm old and long in the tooth.
Safety wheels.
Yeah. So I got the safety wheels. I got the arm guards, the headgear. I'm even wearing a gum guard. I don't know why, but it's like, you know,
you've got to brace yourself.
But I'm having the time of my life, and marriage is amazing. And then from the 2nd to the 12th of October, I'm at the Auto and General Theatre on the Square.
Lovely.
Tickets are,
nice
are at CompuTicket. Come and check it out. Menstruation. I'm actually going to launch the show later on today, so check out my social media.
Awesome.
It's a good time to be Jason Goliath.
Cool poster. It is. I'm not even...
Yeah, don't even... You went on a Jay-Z holiday.
I did.
You've married the woman you love.
I've married...
You're
the woman,
about to
the love of my life. That's too hot for me.
You're about to make all of us laugh again.
I'm going to do my best. Superb. I'm going to try.
Fantastic.
I'm trying to be like you. And I'm going into radio, Gareth. I got to ask you some stuff after the break.
What radio?
I'm not allowed to say yet, but I'm starting in radio, and I've got to say that I'm inspired. You are one of my inspirations. Just because I've seen you utilize the platform to achieve your dreams while kind of facilitating your passion every single day. And I mean, as South Africans, anybody in entertainment, I just go, there's a handful of people who have done it right, who have given us lessons on sustainability, lessons on staying relevant. And I've kind of, you know, watched you, and your consistency inspires me like I can't explain, because you're always the same guy. Whenever I come and see you, whenever I've interviewed you or been interviewed by you, rather, it's been absolutely the same. And I feel like at your core, you simply understand that if you want more than everybody else, you've got to work harder than everybody else. It's a simple thing. It's a simple thing. So thank you for inspiring me, and I'm going to ask you questions off air, and hopefully you can give me advice, and one day I'll be great like you.
Are you getting tearful?
All right, stop it, Sia.
No, my eyes are just
frozen. No, it's such a nice thing and a true thing.
It is.
Okay,
it is.
Very nice. That's all this
is. We can't take a compliment. Why are you going to be shy now?
Big love fest as well. All right, thank you.
We love you.
8 o'clock in the morning. Time to go.
This is CliffCentral.com.